Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Sarah.
What's on your mind today? It's good to see you too. What's on your mind today?
Well, a lot of things are on my mind, but of course that's not a surprise. But more directly towards the show this week, on Sunday, I gave a talk to the Cambria UU, and my topic was about resilience and coping when life feels out of control. And a couple of things that came up when I was researching the talk I thought really fit in with this week. And one of them was the idea of how easy it is to get caught in despair and to want to turn inward and close up and kind of shut the doors so that we don't have to experience anything that's going on around us. And I feel like, you know, week after week, we are talking about things that make us want to curl up in a ball and pull the covers over our head or shut the door or, you know, not look and see anything that's happening. But in many ways, that action of self-protection, of closing ranks all around us, really prevents us from feeling okay. You know, it's like this converse action that we think in some ways that if we numb ourselves or we button down the hatches or we don't, you know, interact with anyone, that somehow that will calm us and that we'll feel better and that we'll be better able to function. But in reality, when we shut down and we don't interact or we don't kind of sit with or grieve with or accept what is happening, we stop any forward motion or any progress or any possibility for things to be different. And so then the pain, agony, despair, sadness, grief actually manifests. It becomes larger in that position of trying to retreat than it would if we actually were able to open ourselves a bit and look around and move forward. Because the only way we really can get out of grief or despair or loss and or disaster is to start moving forward, is to continue moving forward, because we're always moving forward. And so we have to take action to bring ourselves back to a place of being able to function. And the thing that makes it challenging is that when we find ourselves going through some sudden, scary, unexpected transition or loss or grieving experience, one of the things that makes it so overwhelming is that in that moment that you are going through this disaster or experiencing this loss, not only are you experiencing the horror of this loss or tragedy or transition, you also are seeing your future dissolve in front of you. And so those expectations that you have of what your story is or who you are or where you're moving to all of a sudden disappears in the face of any sort of loss or tragedy or trauma. And so it's this double experience that we have. One is having to face this event that we don't want to face. The other is seeing our future disappear and not knowing where we're going. And then there is this feeling of being disoriented and disjointed and dizzy and off balance, because when our future disappears, that path that we're heading on, that sense of groundedness that we usually have, also disappears. But it's in that kind of spinning, disoriented confusion that we feel in the face of tragedy, that sense of being broken in a million pieces. It's actually the start of our new life moving forward. That it's in those moments of complete disorientation, of feeling like everything is lost, of feeling like you don't know where to turn, that's the sign that things are starting to change. That's the sign that you're still actively moving forward. You may not want to be there. You may not want to go through it, but those are the steps we have to take. And so along with that same idea, I was listening to a New York Times story, and it was called Obituary for the Land. And it was painful to listen to, but one of the pieces of the story talked about the lodgepole pine. And the lodgepole pine cone is tightly sealed. It is just closed up with kind of scales that cover this pine cone. And so nothing can permeate it at all, unless high, high heat is felt by the lodgepole pine cone. And when intense heat starts to come towards the pine cone, that which would be in a fire, it opens and releases seeds everywhere around it. And so in anticipation of the destruction of a fire, the lodgepole pine has already released seeds ahead of the fire coming through and planted their future. And so that's what I want to talk about today, is how can we open up ourselves and plant those seeds that will help us start imagining a future. Because the fires, metaphorically and physically, that we're experiencing in every aspect of our life are going to burn through, but new life is going to follow. And what are you going to do to be prepared for that? I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And although we won't be opening the phone lines as traditionally we do, you will be able to participate by sending us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can also follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, or on Facebook. You can leave messages there. I'm happy to respond, and you can also keep up with what direction we're going week after week. And if you'd like to podcast our show so you don't miss any episodes, please visit anywhere where you get your podcasts, Apple, iTunes, or NPR. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist and hit subscribe, and those shows will be uploaded for you to listen to at your convenience. So my guest today is Dr. John Elfers, and I called John and asked him to be my guest because he's fun to talk to, and he has a wide variety of interests, and I thought he'd be someone who would offer some ideas of how we spread those seeds moving forward. And so you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to start that conversation. Baby, I'm amazed the way you love me all the time. Maybe I'm afraid of the way I love you. Baby, I'm amazed the way you pulled me out of time. You hung me on the line. Maybe I'm amazed the way I really need you. Oh, baby, I'm a man. Maybe I'm a lonely man who's in the middle of something that he doesn't really understand. Oh, maybe I'm a man. Maybe you're the only woman who can ever help me. Maybe won't you help me to understand? You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Dr. John Elfers. Dr. Elfers has spent his life working in public education, helping to advance the lives and interests of young people through the County Office of Education. He's been a teacher, a mentor, a guide. Now he is currently semi-retired, but not really, because he works a lot as a volunteer for Central Community Counseling Center. Mm-hmm. I think I got that. Did I say that right? Community Counseling Center, mm-hmm. San Luis Obispo, where he is the chair of the clinical committee. And he also is teaching a class in mindfulness to help people, an ongoing group in mindfulness to help people kind of cope with what's going on in their life, either internally, interpersonally, or with what is happening in the world. And also, Dr. Elfers went back and got his PhD later in life and started a whole nother career working in higher ed, public education, not public education, but in graduate level education. And he is a sex educator and sex therapist, along with everything else that he does. So thank you for being my guest today.
You're welcome. It's wonderful to be here.
So I'm not even sure which direction we'll go, but I did want to talk about, especially because you had a whole career in education and then went back and got your PhD as kind of a second act. And so I'm just curious to know, one, how you've been faring over the last 6 months And what led you to reinvent yourself?
Well, that's a good question. It has been a very interesting 6 months, and I appreciate your opening. Just, as a blatant recognition that we're going through a huge transformation. There's a lot going on for people. A lot of their hopes, their wishes for the future, dissolving. And I get this image sort of just living with uncertainty. How challenging that can be to live in the midst of all this uncertainty, not knowing where we're going to end. We're not going back to normal, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that was, if it ever was normal. But where are we going to land and when? And so living in uncertainty has been a big challenge. How do I deal with that, and how do I confront that directly? So it's been an interesting 6 months. I'm someone who enjoys spending a lot of time at home anyway. So I'm fortunate that my wife and I, we like being together. We get along really well. So I think enviably, we're in that very good position. But we've really had to be creative in terms of how we connect with people, how we stay connected with family, with our friends. That has been a challenge. And I think we've worked through a lot of things that really worked for us in terms of, connecting with our grandchildren. And since we're pretty regular and savvy travelers, probably the most difficult thing has been not being able to get out there. But we also, kind of suffer a lot from realizing that our children are really struggling with having to work at home and raise grandchildren. All those things are, just right in the forefront. So struggling with this, what does it mean to thrive? What does it mean to be resilient in these times and deal with uncertainty and despair? We've had to create a lot of new rituals, a lot of new patterns of how we conduct our lives, and try to have a sense of humor through it all.
One of the cores of resilience is that sense of humor, which yes. is hard to tap into. So I guess I'm curious to know if, and I connected back to you going in to get your PhD kind of later in life. And I was kind of relating to the story of planting those seeds moving forward, that there has to be somewhat of a belief in the future to go and take on something like getting a PhD, when you're past kind of your prime career, is like, what was that motivation? Because I think that's where I want to circle around today, is that how do we help people unlock, their lodgepole pine cones? What kind
yes,
of
yes, I love the image of that.
Right. How do we help to spread those seeds? Because I think the instinct we have right now is to close up. When we really are feeling the heat, we need to be opening up. And so what motivated you at that time? What were the things that were happening in your life that made you say, I'm going to go get this PhD?
Yeah. If I can back up just a little bit, I've always been a lifelong learner. And one of the reasons I went into education, honestly, was that in undergraduate school, I couldn't make a decision about what to major in. And I thought, if I'm in education, I'll always be learning. And that has just been true for me. So for my career, I had to do, a couple master's degrees to get my therapy license and my administrative credential and all that. And as I was coming near the end, I thought, now, wait a minute. I want something for me. I did this for my career. And maybe it's as though over the years I had been, nurturing and creating these, the pine cones for the lodgepole pine, waiting for the heat, and maybe the heat was, realizing that retirement was in my future and wanting to unleash that. So this time around, I said, this one's for me. This is, this going back to school is something I really want to do for myself. And I had no ambition as far as, I'll be a teacher, I'll do something else. It was really more just, I want to learn. I want to probe deeper into all these areas that I'm so interested in and all these areas of focus I had been putting on hold and things I wanted to research and open up new doors. And so, you know, some of this plays out in maybe some of that attitude spilling over into the last 6 months, because I've been kind of primed to look for opportunity. And I work with a lot of students for whom I have to encourage them to look at that, to motivate them. Maybe they come in, they're, you know, kind of, they have those, you know, critical voices going, and maybe they feel a little beaten down. So I really wanted to do that for me and see this as an opportunity, not to recreate the past, but really to create a new future.
You know, so how did you decide, because you're going to have to talk about what your PhD is.
Yeah, it's in a rather obscure field of psychology called transpersonal psychology, which focuses on, you know, that which is, of course, beyond the personal. But a lot of the focus is in areas of religion, spirituality, creativity, exceptional human experiences, kind of what are those upper limits of human potential. And that's where a lot of our research is. Some people, you know, who are in mainstream psychology and programs, when I start describing it, they go, oh, you go to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. As if, well, I guess there's some truth to that. You know, think of it as sort of the Hogwarts of psychology, magic, whatever that might mean. Mm-hmm. That's where my interest lied. And so that's really what I wanted to pursue. And lo and behold, as I was finishing up, doors started opening up. And I think the ink wasn't even dry on my diploma. And they asked me, why don't you come back and teach a course? You've been in education. So it just sort of started from there. And I've been, I think the most exciting thing has been working in areas of research. Many of the students I work with are researching some very interesting topics related to mental health and spirituality. And so it's very exciting. And so I like to hold on. Yeah, I like to hold on to that sense of seeing it as opportunity.
And that's, I think, one of the things that is really coming up for me today and after doing the talk on Sunday is, I think for a lot of people, they're feeling like, this is not the time to do anything, right? Don't buy anything. Don't go anywhere. Don't start something new because everything's precarious. The future is uncertain. It's just hazy. We're just going to hunker down. And part of me, again, we're going to use this metaphor till we can use it no longer, but the heat is on, literally on. And wouldn't this be the time that we would open up ourselves to something new? Because the worst thing that can happen is that it was a cruddy idea. And then you're kind of back to where you started. But yeah, to do nothing feels like how we fall into the pit of despair. And wouldn't it be better to do something kind of wild, like pursue a degree or take on some sort of project? You know, and people have talked about, I'm going to bake sourdough bread or I'm going to do extra yoga. But I'm thinking even more fantastical, and kind of the way you're saying, like something that people would roll their eyes at, something that kind of makes you lay in bed at night.
The wind, yeah.
Yes.
Just be courageous and brave or something. You know, I think there is a sort of natural tendency in difficult times to want to hunker down, pull around the defenses. In fact, we're even expected to shelter to some degree, you know, to kind of stay at home. And it's easy maybe to get in this bubble and put this armor around us and these defenses. But something you said, you know, in your opening, I think, about dealing with all these emotions is it the way through despair and all it is really an uncertainty is to move through. There's no moving around. There's no doing this. It means going through. And by the nature of uncertainty, things are very new. So maybe one of the best ways of approaching that would be to, to pull out that thing that's been on the back burner for a couple of decades and go, wow, now is the time to pull this out and enrich oneself, and to be kind of daring and see what that's like. What does it feel like? It might be a little scary, but hey, we're already you know, there's already a lot of fear and anxiety going around anyway. So, you know, heaping a little more on the pile maybe isn't.
And that's kind of where I am too, right? That right now it's kind of, I have a bring it feeling, you know, that the news doesn't seem to get any better. And so part of me wants to put on my warrior, obviously bring it, because in the face of this, I'm going to keep standing up. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Dr. John Elfers. He spent a lifetime in public education. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist. He went back and received his PhD in transpersonal psychology, and he is not someone that shies away from a challenge. And that's what I want to talk about today, is in the face of despair, how can we find a way to do something bold? And I said something a little different than what we talked about at the beginning of the quarantine, which is, you know, learning how to knit or taking on some kind of at-home activities. But what is something larger that you've always felt you might want to do, but it was never the right time? It was never the right time to go back to school. We never had the money for that. No. Or it wasn't the right time to change careers, or it wasn't the right time to pack up and go. And this might, I'm not trying to minimize the challenges of having economic uncertainty and schools not open. I'm not trying to minimize that, but I am trying to, I think, put a little heat to this idea that if we sit and wait for things to get better, it could be a really long time. And, you know, I think back to, in some ways, you know, 2008, when we had the last big crash of the economy. And of course, there are many other factors in play now that are much worse. But in 2008, if everyone hunkered down and said, I will do nothing until things are better, you're sitting around for 6-7 years before the economy really turned around. And do we all have 6-7 years to sit and wait for that right time? And although we're not opening the phone lines today, you can still call in and ask your question or make your comment. Sarah will share it with us. Our number is 805-549-8855. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. All right. So, Dr. Elfers, you jumped in 2006 and did this PhD. When was the last time you did something else that was a little risky and you thought, maybe this isn't the right time, but I'm doing it anyway?
Well, what comes to mind is the most immediate thing I did. Back in end of June, I guess I was getting a little stir crazy, and I go, I really want to get out of here. So I loaded up my backpack, which I had not done in quite a few years. I put it on, 45 pounds worth of gear, and hauled up a mountain to about 8,000 feet. Spent 5 days back there thinking, well, you know, I've never done a trip to that degree by myself. And so I really was going by myself. And so it was really this sort of, you know, kind of soul searching time. Maybe I'll just go and see what happens. And it was interesting. So it was totally new. Well, not completely new, but I hadn't done it for a while. And I met some interesting people back there. And of course, you know, we were socially distancing. Like, it's pretty easy to do when you're, you know, up in the mountains. So that was sort of this thing I just did more on an impulse. And I'm so glad I did. I came back and had this really new perspective. So, you know, almost, I guess I would say the sort of lesson here is maybe just finding those things that are new or a little impulsive, things that I may not normally do just to try it out. Because I really like what you said about, you know, we really are creating our own future. We can't sit around and wait for other people to do it. And part of that future means working on myself. You know, what are the impediments to keep me from moving forward? But it's also kind of reaching out and exploring things and talking to people, see what other people are doing a little soul searching about what is that thing I always sort of wanted to do, and maybe now is the time.
And where is that to be able to be quiet enough to hear the voice of guidance? And I think going on a solo backpacking trip is one of the ways you can hear that. And did it surprise you that you were strong enough to haul that 45 pounds and be out on the road for 8 days? I mean, because if it's, I would imagine that going up into altitude and backpacking when you don't do it on a regular basis, is challenging.
It is. I was feeling my age. I mean, I was really glad I did. It had been a while, but so I kind of had to dig into some other areas of strength and go, okay, you know, I can do this. You know, it's a step at a time. It's a breath at a time. There were moments when it's like, you know, what was the last 1,000 feet ahead of me was looking pretty steep. And so, yeah, sort of that moment by moment, really having to dig in and find the strength to make that final ascent, I guess. And then, you know, the opportunity for reflection is really important, too. I think that's a part of this. Some of the soul searching to, you know, find out what are those things, you know, if I can create some room for new inspiration, new creativity to come forward that might look different than it has in the past.
When I think about what you said, you know, about your daughters, your children, and being at home working and, you know, having to do school. And I know Sarah and I talk about it every week before the show starts. How are things going with, you know, at home virtual learning? And everyone has many different experiences with it. And again, I don't want to minimize people's experience because every day I'm hearing how hard this is. And my own family has been living here with us off and on and working from home, and our granddaughter's here. So I get all of that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if I don't say it out loud, who's going to say it out loud? But maybe we're trying too hard to do things in a familiar way. You know, maybe we're trying too hard to replicate school for our kids, because if they don't have that, we're not quite sure what will happen to them. And part of me says, what will happen to them if they don't have a formal public education for a year? What are the other ways you can supplement that? What will they really lose at the end of the day? Because everyone's in the same place. And as you mentioned, like we're creating that new future, and the people who are going to thrive when we come out the other side are going to be the ones who are already taking action to live differently. You know, they're looking for ways to support themselves differently than they used to. They're looking for ways to educate their children differently. You know, it feels like we're trying to hold on to this idea of the conveyor belt of, I need my child to be in public education every day, K through 12, so they'll get into the best university and get the best job. But is any of that really in play moving forward? It will, you know, university educations look anything like they did? Should we be putting our kids through the ringer K through 12 on the hopes that they get into a great university if our whole academic system changes? And you work in education, so
I think the changes to education may be one area that are really the most profound structurally, and even how we think about education. I mean, we've been so much into the habit of, like, you know, you kiss your kids before they go to school, you don't see them for 6 hours, they come back, how was your day, show me your homework, that kind of stuff. Now it's homeschooling. I mean, some of the online stuff is there, okay, but particularly for young children, there's a lot of homeschooling going on. And what is that doing for parents who are having to reach in and be creative and interact with their children? You know, we think that actually our grandchildren and children may think of this, may remember this as one of the most meaningful, profound times of, you know, of their life, as they think back and they go, yeah, I had all that time with mom or dad, and we did these things. So it can be really sort of restructuring family relationships. But yeah, how we think about education moving forward and realizing how much of education is simply imparting information, and how much of that can be done in an online format, and how much of it is social development, character development, and what that might look like in terms of, you know, rethinking schools, rethinking education, even higher education. I just did a seminar for our school program in higher education in transpersonal psychology. And there were about 50 people there, and they were from around the world. This wouldn't have happened without this. So there were 3 people from China, a couple people from Germany. And we had this amazing gathering and conversation. Now, it's not quite as, you know, it's different than face-to-face. But I think we were able to wring some meaning and significance out of it and just hear how other people in the world are dealing with COVID, you know, what's happening in Germany, what's happening in China. This was, it was very meaningful. So I think part of the change that needs to happen is in our brain, you know, how we cognitively think about what's happening to us and really what the possibilities are. And, you know, some of that is in, as you said, sort of the stories we tell mm-hmm. and what sort of meaning do we make about what's happening. And can part of that meaning and story be that we're, you know, sort of using this as an opportunity to really jump into something new and exciting?
Or do we stay frozen and locked into our boxes? And I think that's the dilemma, because our psyches are screaming, we're not safe, that fight or flight. And so many of us are trying to retreat and just hunker down and get by. I'll just get by until things get better. But the other voice inside of us, the warrior that we all have, is saying, I'm mm-hmm. not going to hide. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is Dr. John Elfers, and we're just kind of wandering through the possibilities of what can our lives look like now and moving forward. Do we get frozen, or do we start to spread the seeds of a potentially different future? You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to continue our conversation. Hey, you don't have to worry, 'cause baby, Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guest today is Dr. John Elfers, and we're talking about what it looks like to spread the seeds of possibility moving forward into the future. And again, I know I can just see your faces in some way, because you're thinking, why is she talking about this today? Doesn't she know how scary everything is? Doesn't she realize that California's on fire? Doesn't she realize that our political structure, doesn't she realize? I understand that. I can feel you pushing back on me. But at the same time, I just can't get over this idea that we either dive into despair and hide and hope things get better, or we pop our heads up and we start moving in a direction that'll either be fabulous or it'll take us nowhere, but at least we've gone somewhere, because we're never going to see a new future. We're never going to create a new future, and we're going to never stop feeling as disoriented and disjointed and dizzy as we do right now until we start to find some sort of solid ground to move to. And that usually comes in the form of a dream that we have, just a nugget that we have, that this vision that we have that, hey, that might be something I could try. And this is the best time to take that crazy chance, because nothing is solid. Everything is potential and possibility. Maybe you shouldn't be holding on to that mortgage as tightly, or that apartment. Maybe you pack it up and you go someplace totally different that doesn't cost as much to live in. Maybe you take the kids and you say, we're going to do academic learning for a couple hours a day. Then the rest of it, we're going to learn how to make sourdough together, or learn how to sew, or we're going to learn to play guitar, or we're going to put on backpacks. You know, I'm asking you to kind of get into this fanciful place with me today and with my guest. So what do you think, Dr. Elfers?
Well, like, you know, what you were...
fanciful thing?
Yeah, what you were just describing is this... What you know makes me think is that, you know, sometimes what at the time what seems to be the worst thing turns out later to be like the best thing, and so I think in part there's sort of this element of trust. I'm kind of thinking about 15 years ago, my wife and I were really interested in this house. And, you know, someone bought it. We didn't get it. We were so disappointed. It was like the perfect place. And then we came up with this whole other thing. After a couple months, we realized, you know, what we really wanted to do was downsize. We end up doing it. And to this day, we're just thankful that, like, oh, my gosh, I am so glad that we didn't do that. I'd still be paying a mortgage right now. But what all this was making me think of is there's a whole body of literature on post-traumatic growth. Which is fairly new in the last decade or so. And it's really encouraging. It's really astounding. And if I can just summarize quickly, so what is post-traumatic growth? So when people have traumatic experiences, of which many people are having traumatic experiences that would qualify, right? Their family members are dying, they've lost their job and their security, you know, all these things are happening. And so when people have traumatic experiences, and then they struggle and they struggle and they work, and then they come back to where they were before. So they quote unquote recover from that, you know, traumatic experience, whatever it is. I'm sort of back to my baseline. What post-traumatic growth is, it says there's, for a lot of people, they don't go back to the baseline. They keep going. And they actually end up being more resilient. They end up feeling like they're thriving more, that they're in a better place than they were prior to that traumatic experience. The key, though, is that you have to do the work. You know, it's just like a lottery, and maybe your number comes up and, oh, you get post-traumatic growth. If you're willing to do the work, and what the research says is some of the areas where people end up thriving more, they end up becoming more spiritual. They become more involved with their family. They have improved relationships. All of the things that we put such a high priority on, those are enhanced as a result of this. And so to me, what is encouraging about that is it's, you know, if people are willing to do the work, it is sort of that no pain, no gain sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to reduce it quite to that, but
right.
But what it does for me is it brings this sense of hope. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that there is light at the end of the tunnel, even when it's completely dark, you know, just trusting. I think there's an element of trust that goes with this too, in this sort of creativity, just sort of realizing that if I dig deep and I feel like I'm really being guided by my deeper self, that it's going to be fine. You know, I have to trust in that.
Well, I think, also, not and jumping to that, there's, you have to have some willingness to have it all fail, right? Whatever even though I'm going to take this leap, or, you know, I'm taking this area of growth and I feel real good and I feel a little bit resilient, and but I also have to be willing to fail if this path I go down doesn't work well, or if I, you know, invest in something and it doesn't pay off. Because that's what I'm thinking, that the work really has to entail taking a chance on yourself. Because maybe prior to the trauma, we get so comfortable, we become, we don't want to feel pain, we become a little afraid of anything in our life changing, and it makes us rigid. And one of the benefits of trauma, if there is one, is that it busts us apart. We are broken and the rigidity is gone. And so now, in that space of flexibility, we actually can take chances that we weren't willing to take before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even this notion that what I used to think of was failure, maybe it's, you know, maybe in the long run, that's really not what it's going to look like. In the short term, it looks like, oh, I failed, you know. But if there is that element of trust, and I think part of this, if I could kind of work into the mindfulness tradition, is not being too attached to the results. Mm-hmm. You know, like knowing I'm supposed to be doing this and I have a goal and I know where, well, at least where my next step is, and I'm going to kind of make it up along the way and not be too attached to this notion of like, well, it has to look like this at the other end, because I think that is the issue. We really don't know. And so on the one hand, that can be discouraging in terms of moving forward, but it also really does open up possibility to really think broadly. I mean, I may be thinking of things I never would have thought of had it not been for the current state that I'm in. Mm-hmm. And working on that. I also think there's another element too, I sort of want to interject here. And that's that I think one of the ways that really helps with thriving and resilience and all that is to really, to be of service, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of people are kind of hunkered down and maybe not feeling like, oh, am I really contributing something? Because a lot of things we're talking about people wanting to do end up helping a lot of other people, or they help our family members, or they help our relationships. And so what does it mean to be of service in a time when we're sort of quarantined and spending a lot of time at home? And how do we do that? And how can we be, you know, creative around that and reach out? Because a lot of things we might want to be building for the future involve things that benefit a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. You know, we're building new social structures, new types of relationships, those kinds of things.
Well, and you know, one of the things we were talking about was the leaning into relationships during the post, you know, traumatic growth period, is that having those relationships that we can count on are kind of the key to moving forward, because you can lose everything and people that you love as well. But to have the courage to keep leaning into our intimate relationships, to have someone that you share your dreams with, to have someone you talk to about your crazy ideas, that also, I think, is a piece of it, that right now it's really tempting, again, to isolate. We feel afraid. We don't want to talk to other people because maybe it'll make us feel more afraid, or it'll make them feel afraid. Or with our children, you know, we're trying to keep things as normal as it was for them before, when they know deep inside that things aren't the way they used to be. And so how do we as parents continue to engage with our children and really deepen those relationships and not try to, I keep have this image of us trying to march along and pretend, you know, don't look behind the curtain, because, you know, we're just going to keep going forward as everything's okay. But wouldn't it be in some ways better to take it all down and take stock of the people in your life and the opportunities you have, and to again start spreading those seeds to move forward? Because I think of Daniel Quinn, who wrote Ishmael. He also wrote a book about education, and he said, you know, public education was kind of the death knell for the collective family system, because prior to public education, children grew up with their parents. They grew up with their families. They grew up with their social structure. So they learned how to be adults and humans by being with adults and humans who they were closely related to. And at some point, we decided that it'd be better to separate children from their parents for 6 hours a day and make two separate worlds. And is that in the best interest for the mental health and well-being for children and families? Anyways, my guest is Dr. John Alfers. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And in our last segment, if you have a comment or question, our number is 805-549-8855. So what do you think about that, Dr. Alfers?
Yeah. You know, I think the what you were just saying about education, you know, kind of cycling back around there. We did sort of go to this kind of conveyor belt model and very regimented, sort of the factory model. That was the structure of education. But prior to that, you're right, children learned at home. And as far as advanced education, we had an apprentice model, mm-hmm. which is, you know, you align yourself with someone that you aspire to be like or aspire to learn from. And now that's an interesting model that, you know, maybe we have to think more in those terms. I mean, you and I, you know, we went through the whole therapy the licensure things where you have a supervisor who really looks over your shoulder and helps. And I love that model. And I still like that a lot of the work I do is within that. It's very much an apprentice model. And I love it because I'm always learning, of course. But we may have to rethink education in terms of quality relationships rather than just in knowledge, because you can get knowledge anywhere. I mean, let's face it. What is it that you want to know that Google can't answer, you know, somewhere out there? If you just, I'm there all day for those little details I need. Ooh, what year was that person born? Well, let me ask. We have so much information at our fingertips, but what is more important is how do we make meaning out of all this information? And I think that's a whole nother thing. What happens in a big transformation is people's sense of meaning. You know, what does it all mean? That's mm-hmm. where the uncertainty come in. I don't know what it all means. And that's where people in times like this, they can go into like a religious or spiritual crisis mm-hmm. because their understanding of their religious framework isn't big enough to incorporate this whole pandemic thing and the suffering and why some people are getting it and other people are not, and some are dying. I mean, how does it all, what's the big picture? And when those structures crumble as well, not only our relationships, we have to create meaning. We don't find meaning. We create it. We know that in education, right? That's, you know, John Dewey and Piaget, we create meaning from the bits and pieces of the chaos where we find ourselves out of the ashes of all this. So, it's another way of looking at it. Yeah, go ahead.
No, but I love all of that because that's when I'm talking about spreading those seeds. Like, is there an apprenticeship person that you look up to, someone that you could spend time with? Because traditional work won't come back the way it did. And what kind of things will we need people to be able to do, in order to move forward? Like, what are the skills that we're going to need? And again, like you said, waiting isn't going to help us. It's the people who are actually taking steps to say, here's where I want to be in 5-10 years or in 1 year. I'm going to in that direction. And then other people are going to say, hey, if you're going someplace, I want some hope. I want some vision. I'm following you too. So Sarah, what do you got for me?
Well, we just had somebody call in to the 805-549-8855 number. She was from Santa Margarita, and she was saying that because she's been able to take care of some things in her life that she wanted to, she had been putting them off before because she had always been busy with two jobs. And currently, mm-hmm. without the two jobs, she was able to refinance her house, change her phone carrier, and do some things that relieved a lot of stress right now.
And that is so helpful because, again, as Dr. Alfers has said, and we keep mentioning, is that in despair, in times of despair, those little steps towards action can start to trigger bigger steps towards action.
Yeah, I agree. And that's a great example. Those things that I had been putting off for a long time. And now, you know, I have a little window of opportunity. And so, taking advantage of those, using them creatively, using them as a way to sort of find meaning, maybe to be of service, all these things that can be to be really helpful.
I just keep thinking too that the more chaotic and disjointed and quicksandy your life feels right now, is the bigger the opportunity to make change. Because I think for a lot of people, you know, that are just kind of bouncing along, it's like, well, I still have my work and I'm working from home and I still have things that are pretty stable. Or like you said, I kind of like being at home. So this is probably that group, that population that kind of in some ways floats through all of the pandemic and the transitions and kind of accepts and adapts. But I think for the people who are really spinning, whose lives really feel like they're tanking, those are the people that actually are the lodgepole pine cones. Like, you are the ones that are splitting open. Things are breaking. Mm-hmm. And so this, instead of trying to hunker down harder or try to, you know, grab all the pieces that are breaking and piece it back together. This is almost freedom. It's almost like you're being shot out of what the constraints of our society have been into a space that feels disorienting and as if there's no ground, but it's the essence of freedom. Because when you're no longer tethered to those things you felt you needed to be tethered to, you now can really tap into yourself. Because again, can it get any worse? You know, if you've lost your job and you've lost all these things, can it get any worse? Probably, but in some ways it can't, because if you have yourself and you have this understanding that there really is no meaning to anything in life unless we apply meaning to it. And so when you shift what you've decided meaning is, you know, backpacking can be the most meaningful thing, or packing up your family and subsistence farming can become the most meaningful thing. Yeah. Like, when we become untethered, we actually start to live.
Yeah, starting that garden that you've always wanted to start in the back. But yeah, I think one of the most difficult things is to move towards some of those uncomfortable emotions that come up, but that really is the way through. And maybe one of them is just uncertainty and being willing to embrace uncertainty, whatever that takes, because there's wisdom in emotion. As you know, that's one of your calling cards, the emotion person here. So, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in there. If I can be open to it, what is uncertainty telling me? What is it telling me about myself? How can I use this to be willing to let go of everything that used to seem familiar, that I used to depend on, everything that really felt solid? And now it's like I'm in this quicksand situation. But maybe it's like I'm supposed to be swimming now. Maybe that's it. But and I don't want to minimize. I mean, I realize it's hard. It's hard to go into the sort of darker emotions. But if done well and done a little bit at a time, you don't have to be overwhelmed and take it all on. But it's one of the things we do in the mindfulness is just take them on a little at a time, a little bit of the sadness, the uncertainty, the chaos. Be willing to be open to that. And there's some wisdom in there.
And I think you hit on the key thing, Dr. Alfaris, is that these journeys that we're talking about aren't really solo journeys. They really are best dealt with a guide, with a mentor, mm-hmm. with a wise elder. Like, this is the time that you reach out and tap into your network or find a network. Go to the community counseling center and say, I'm untethered, but I don't want to go back to the way things were. So please, God, you know, be my guide in this. Help me find meaning. Help me move forward. Because I think that's, to me, the essence of psychotherapy in its most beautiful potential, is to help people who are spinning but don't need advice. They just need someone to lead them out of the darkness or mm-hmm. to shine the light so they can find their own way. I want to really reiterate that, because I'm not talking about casting off all of your tethers and then wandering into the desert. I'm talking about casting off the tethers and then finding an apprenticeship or a guru or your mentor or a psychotherapist that you can utilize to help you make sense and different meaning.
Yes.
So in our last couple minutes, talk a little bit about mm-hmm. your mindfulness group and some of the services through the community counseling.
Yeah. So, and I would say is that if all these things that we're talking about moving forward and seeing the opportunity and all that, if you're still kind of mired in the muck and really need to get unstuck, then it is time to reach out. And there's even a lot of amazing opportunities now. So at Community Counseling Center, there's a lot of therapists who can work virtually. We have a sliding scale program, so money should not be an issue. We have a lot of young new therapists who are just anxious to help and be of service. So there's all that. And, you know, we're even starting to work a little bit more face-to-face, slowly kind of coming back into that. We are offering this mindfulness group, which, you know, deals with a lot of the emotions and things coming up. Mindfulness is a great strategy. Along, and we teach other kinds of calming techniques, breathing techniques, inward focus. That happens every Thursday at 11 o'clock. It's free. It's a drop-in group. You just go on Zoom and come in. If you go to the Community Counseling Center website under events, you'll see all the details. And there's videos there. But, you know, with podcasts and things, your mentor out there, you know, maybe is doing an interview like this or is available. I think those are, there's a lot of opportunities for help at the same time. It doesn't have to be isolating. I think maybe isolating is probably not the thing to do, right? As you're saying, you know, it's a time to reach out, connect with people.
Yes.
In ways that you haven't before.
And with different exciting. People in different ways, because mm-hmm. trying to go back and redo the story the way it used to be isn't moving forward. So if you have never gone to the community counseling center, you've never gone to a psychotherapist, or you've never reached out to a mentor or contacted that person you really admire and say, I'd like to be like you. Like, this is the time to rewrite that. And again, it's not by closing down and isolating and hoping it all passes. It's feeling the heat and yeah. allowing yourself to open up and start to spread the seeds. So, Dr. Alfers, thank you so much for Zooming in with me this week.
And you're welcome.
People can find you at the Community Counseling Center and in the mindfulness course on Thursday, so you can have time to sit with a wise elder, Dr. John Alfers. You can get further information by finding me at Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or podcast our shows. Follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, or find me on Facebook. As always, thank you for being part of the conversation and for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. For all those times you stood by me, for all the truth that you made me see, for all the joy you brought to my life, for all the wrong you made right.